Parashat Vayigash, we're going to talk about the piece where the brothers return and inform Yaakov about the fact that Yosef is alive. Which actually is, you were saying, trauma. Like we're gonna talk about that. It's very interesting. How do you tell someone, you know, just news that would be difficult for them?
With a magical heart.
With a magical heart. You know, okay, we're gonna, well, that's a legend. It's not even in the Midrash. I'm gonna read you the Midrash, and then we'll see why she needed a magical heart. We'll talk in a second. So we're gonna start back from after Yosef revealed himself, okay, and then the people, and now. And now Paro finds out about it. Okay, so we're going to start in the middle of Perek Memhe, Patuk Tet Zayin. Memhe Tet Zayin. Because the brothers have to return home, and then they have to find out about, they have to figure out how to tell their father, what to tell their father, and, you know, like not such a simple matter. You know, the whole thing is pretty complicated.
It also requires somewhat of a confession.
And, well, we'll see. And then we're going to talk about a very, very famous Rashi, okay? And what the connection between that Rashi is and our Parsha and us, I guess. Okay. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vakol Nishma, you see where I am? Okay. Mem Hei Tet Zayin. Vakol Nishma Beit Paro Lemor Ba'u Achei Yosef. Okay? It was heard in the house of Paro, in the house of the Pharaoh. The brothers of Yosef have come, and it was just good in their eyes. They were very happy about this. Why would they be so happy about it?
Mem
hei
what?
Mem hei tezai. They were very happy about it. It was good in their eyes. Well, why, in simple fact, why is it good in their eyes?
The economy?
Yeah. You're so influenced on Midrash. You're already skipping and you're cheating on Rashi.
No, that was just really my gut.
Why are they happy? The brothers of Joseph come. Why are they happy? Joseph's happy. That's a simple understanding. Why does Paro care that Yosef's brothers have come?
Oh.
Okay? The Midrash says something very interesting. Why was everybody happy? Okay? Because until now, Yosef, they always assumed that Yosef, this guy who saved them, was an Eved, was a slave. But now they realize, here are his brothers, he comes from a very respected family in Canaan, even though he treated him like dirt. But, okay, so therefore it makes Egypt better. When you find out afterwards that you don't like it, they don't do much for you. I respect that. Okay. Pasuk Yudayin. Vayomer Paro el Yosef, Emor el Achecha Zot Asu. Talk to your brothers and do this. Tanu et Bi'irchem. Load up your Bi'irchem. Load up your
beasts.
Thank you. Right. Ulchu bo Arz HaKanan. Go back to Arz HaKanan. Ukechu et Abichem ve'et Batechem. Ubo Eli. Go take your father. Take your father and your household and come to me. I'll give you the goodness of Egypt and you will eat the fat of the land. Meaning, come here. Why would you want them to come here? Simple understanding.
He doesn't want Yosef to leave.
Right. Yeah.
Yosef helped
them
with the famine.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's hard to assume that Yosef would leave at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are the odds that Yosef's really going to leave? But still, like the Midrash does say that he was afraid that Yosef would leave. Yosef saved the country. But even more than that, what's the reason? You're second in command, so like his whole family's over there. We like
Sounds
Yosef.
Nice.
Yeah. This Pharaoh seems very, how should we say, magnanimous. He wants the truth. He wants the good for his people. This Pharaoh comes off. He has very good PR in the Torah. Right. He makes you. I mean, what do we think of non-Jewish rulers who are happy to let Jews come and have prominent places in their government? What's the Jewish perspective on that? What? You're looking at me.
It's hard for me not to be cynical.
That's nice until they're not nice.
It's all for the good of the country, not for the good of the Jews.
No, right. Why would you expect it, meaning... What's for the good of the Jews? Only we look at it from, like, is this good for the Jews or not good for the Jews? Mm-hmm. Like, isn't it, it's the most reasonable thing for the ruler to say.
I'm thinking, okay, if the Jews come, the economy goes up, the level of education goes up.
If the Jews come, not only if the Jews come, but we certainly help. Right, but instead of there being anti-Semitism or hatred or whatever, like, Ivri, Yosef is very clear. I'm an Eved Ivri. He could have said Eved Ivri goodbye. Paro didn't say that. Paro said, you seem to have the truth. You seem to know what to do. You seem capable. You know, we like non-Jews who have no issue. We don't want them to pick us because we're Jews, do we? Just like we don't want them to pick on us because we're Jews.
Power seems to come up okay. His beasts?
What? Load up your beasts, meaning give them a lot of stuff.
To his brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Load up. We'll send you back with a bunch of stuff. Your debt. V'atatzu beit hazot asu k'chu lachem me'eretz Mitzrayim agalot letapchem u'neshechem u'nesatem et avichem u'batem. Take from the land of Egypt agalot. What are agalot?
Lifts.
Wagons.
Lifts.
Bring a lift.
Right, bring a lift. Wagons. For your children and for your wives. And you shall u'nesatem. Carry your father u'batem and come. Okay? Very interesting. We're going to see these wagons have very specific significance. We're going to see very soon. Okay, but whose idea is it? I'm going to point this out. Whose idea is it? Paro says, send the wagons. Okay? Now, I point this out. Why? How did they travel until now?
They came walking.
Well, how did they travel? How did they carry their stuff? And the Psukim are very explicit about this. Are they? Right. See, this was interesting
to me.
They
came in 10 different gates.
How did they come? How did they carry their stuff? How do they bring, like, if you are traveling, it's very interesting. You're traveling this brother specifically came down in order to bring back food. Okay? To carry back as much food as they possibly could carry from Canaan, from Egypt back home. How much could you possibly carry? Could one person, how much food?
You would think they would buy a wagon once they arrived and load it up.
You would think. Okay? What do you think?
Well,
that?
Then there's also the issue of they can only take what's not going to spoil on the trip.
Okay, but you want to take as much grain as you possibly can take, correct? How do you take the grain? How do you do it?
You need a wagon.
You need a horse.
Right? You would need a wagon, okay? Or, right, but they didn't have wagons. How do I know? It's very explicit, and I actually thought about this, and I think there's a good reason for it. At the end of Miketz, remember when they're... where does it say this? Not even in the middle of Miketz, when they come back from Mitzrayim the first time, and they stop at the hotel. Hold on. Okay. 1 second. I'm just looking for a second. When they stop at the hotel. Here we are. It says explicitly, Perek Mem Bet Pasuk Chavav, Vayisu et Shivram al Chamorehem. They carried their shever, their bounty, whatever they bought. How do they carry it? Al Chamorehem.
On their donkeys.
On their donkeys. Right? How do they take their stuff? And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. Why would they? There are two reasons. Two reasons that you would have a donkey and not a wagon. Very simple. What are the two reasons?
Bandits.
What?
Bandits.
Bandits are better than donkeys?
Yeah.
Speed? Donkeys are fast.
No,
they're faster than
bandits. Catch up to donkeys? There's two simple reasons, and you'd be surprised, I'm kind of making up. The first one is, how do you know there were roads? A wagon is not simple if you don't have a paved road. They might have had paths, but if they're traveling in desert, they're traveling, meaning there might be known routes.
Well, they wouldn't have had roads, because wasn't it the Romans?
When do you build roads?
When you have trade between two places.
Armies.
No, when do you build roads? When you have enough vehicles in order to need the roads. Right? A donkey can travel anywhere. Mountain paths or whatever. The only time you build roads is when you need to have roads that are appropriate. That's number one. Number two, how do you build wagons? What's the essential element of a wagon?
What?
No.
Wheels.
What? No. That's not the essential part of the wagon. What's the most complicated, most difficult part of the wagon?
The axle.
That's correct. Why?
It's flexible for different terrain.
The axle does not have to be flexible for to different. I don't even mean the axle. I meant the spokes of the wheel. Okay, think about it. This is not a simple matter. Today we take the wheel like for granted. They invented the wheel. The wheel is easy to invent. Anybody can invent a wheel. What's hard to invent is what's the difficult part, where something sits in the wheel and it can rotate and rotate freely without breaking. Right? In order to do that, what do you need? In order to make that, what do you need? A reliable axle. Nobody knows? A reliable spoke? Hello? You're all like space unknown here. Hello, hello, hello. What?
Ask me about beauty.
Right? In order to build a wheel, you need a metallurgist. You need significant ability to forge metal.
Yeah, but how do you know they hadn't built that yet? They built the...
Who? Who built the pyramids?
The Jews.
Later.
What?
Well, the Jews weren't the engineers. They were just the builders.
Right.
But I'm saying they had advanced technology.
Well, who? The Jews had advanced technology?
The Egyptians.
Meaning, I'm not entirely sure.
And they've done all these studies how the pyramids are like match up to astrological, like the stars line up. It's a very complicated.
Remember, who always has the most power militarily? He who has the most advanced technology. Right? What was the symbol of Paro's might? What was the symbol of the might of Paro?
The pyramid?
No, the might of Paro. That what?
Pyramid.
Not just the army. It wasn't the army. What did Paro take with him? When he went to chase the Jews later, 200 years later.
Chariots?
Yes.
Well, yeah, horses.
Horses pulling chariots. It was the chariots. Okay? It was the... what does the chariot symbolize? The military might of Paro. Was it just the wealth? It was the... He's on... You're higher. You're like, do they... I don't know. Is it better to fight in a chariot? I wonder. Like, you know, you're higher up than the person. You're on the horse. You know, I don't know. It's a good question. But the idea was this advanced society. If you think about it, like, I don't know. Like, somebody has to do history to think about it. I'm sure not every metallurgist had the ability to heat things in such a way to get it so exact as to create a good wheel. Now, you think it's so obvious, but it's really not. Like, you remember, we also had the Flintstones? Did you grow up with the Flintstones?
Yeah.
Right? Just, all you need is a stone and, your feet. No, it's not. That's not so simple. So it would be interesting for me to know, to figure out when that really spread. You know, like, it's easier to build a boat with ropes than it is to build a reliable wheel, like reliable machinery, which is much later. Okay? So who had it?
Mitzrayim.
Who in Egypt?
Pharaoh.
Only the king. Right? The symbol of was the king. What's that?
Rolls Royce.
That's right. That's right. Much wealthier, much more important. So we're going to come back to these agalot. He said, give them the agalot. And that's a treat. Because when Yaakov brought his family back from Haran, did they have wagons? Did they really need to lift their children and to bring their wives? No, everybody walked. It wasn't really such a big deal. He says, no, stand these agalot. Very good. And we're going to come back to this. It's not. I didn't go in my little history spiel that somebody who actually knows history might laugh at. I kind of made it up, but I think there might be some truth to it. We'll see. Okay. Where am I? I turned the page. Okay. Here we are. Pasuk. Your tet. Oh no, we did that. Chaf. Ve'enechem al tachos al klechem. Don't worry about all your stuff there, right? In Canaan. Ki tuv kol eretz Yisrael lachem. Because I will give you all the goodness of the land of Egypt.
What's tuv and tov? What's the
difference? I don't know. Good question. Tuv is all the goodness of, okay? The bounty of. Vayasukim b'nei Yisrael, vayitem lehem Yosef agalot al pi paro, vayitem lehem tzeda lederech. Okay? Yosef gave them agalot al pi paro, and that, by the way, shows you how much big of a deal it is. Like, you don't just give the agalot. The only way, we're going to see, the only way you give agalot is al pi paro. Vayitem lehem tzeda lederech. And he gave them tzeda. Tzeda lederech, you've heard of that phrase? Like, you know. What? Tzeda is, tzeda lederech, how do you translate that? It's like provisions. Provisions for the way. Lekulam natan la'ish chalifot smalot. He all gave them chalifot smalot, blankets or clothes, whatever. Ulebinyamin natan shlosh me'ot kesef v'chamesh chalifot smalot. And Binyamin, his brother,
got
money and five smalot. So everyone else got one, everybody, he got five. Okay? So, not sure why that was a good idea. Ulaviv shalach kizot. This is what he sent to his father. Asarach chomorim nos'im mituv mitzayim. 10 donkeys carrying the goodness of Egypt. V'ezer atarot nosod bar b'lechem u'mazon la'aviv la'derech. Again, his father
doesn't
got...
Doesn't he want to see his father?
Yeah.
So why is he sending all this stuff and staying in Egypt?
As gifts. In order to bring him back down. He wants to see his father. He wants to bring his father back down. Oh. Why didn't he go? You know why he didn't go?
Didn't want to kill him.
No.
Yeah, didn't want to give him a heart attack. And
Pharaoh wouldn't allow
him. I don't think Pharaoh would allow him to go.
He was afraid of
him. Yeah, I don't think Pharaoh would let him go. Yosef, you know. Right. We're in the middle of a famine here. You know, I don't think it's going to work. Okay. And remember, by the way, Pharaoh does let him go later. When does Pharaoh let him go? You remember? He asked for permission to go only once, to bury his father.
To take the bones.
Right, that he swore that he would take him back. Okay, let's go. Vayishlach et achiv, vayelchu, vayomer lehem. And now it gets interesting. Chav Dalet. Al tirgazu baderech. Al tirgazu baderech. Rogez. What does rogez mean?
Quarrel.
That's what they translated. Do not quarrel. Now, you have to ask yourself, why does he translate? What does rogez mean? Chav Dalet. Chav Dalet. 24. What?
Angry.
What does berugis mean?
Something like having a grudge.
Upset with.
Upset with. Angered. Okay? Do not tirgizu baderech. He doesn't say what. Now, what's a simple understanding of tirgizu baderech? How would you interpret it?
They shouldn't fight among each other.
Why would they fight?
Because they're going back to their father to say, we found Yosef and it's going to be a big problem.
Okay. What are they fighting about?
Who did it? Who
was
wrong? How
are they
going to
tell him?
Who
was
wrong? I think Laurie's correct. The first question is, who's responsible? Who's to blame? Al tirgazu baderech. Okay? But that's not what Rashi says. Interesting. Rashi gives three pshatim. Look at Rashi, Chav Dalet. Al tirgazu baderech. Al titasku bidvar halacha. This is, of course, you know, like, this is what you think the first shot is, right? Don't get involved in halachic discussions. Why? Shalot tirgazu aleichem haderech. Because if you ever seen, like, rabbis who are, like, so, like, in the clouds, you know? Like, I remember they said about a certain Rosh Yeshiva in YU that they didn't let him drive anymore. Because he was just like, he'd start thinking about, you know, whatever the sikh was, and then he'd be like, not good. You know, and he was a young man, it wasn't that he was old, but he was like, just, you know, he's like, don't get involved in these important discussions, and because you'll go take a wrong turn, and God only knows. Dabar acher. Rashi continues. Al tafsiu psia gasa, v'hikansu b'cheima le'ir. Don't take too long steps that are too large, too long of steps, and you'll become angered b'chema when you come to the city. And you shouldn't step too quickly. It's based on a midrash. There are certain midrashim that talk about, like, you know, taking too wide, large steps or too small steps. Okay, look at the third Rashi. Look inside the third Rashi. What?
You'll make it angry.
I don't know. I really never understood that midrash. Third Rashi. Lefi pshutosh shel mikra yesh lomar lefi shehayu nichlamim. They were embarrassed. Hayado eg shema yibu b'derech al dvar mechirato. He was worried. Maybe they will fight. Yivu. They will fight on the rivu b'derech on the selling. Lihtvakeach zeim zev lamar ayad chanim kar. Atasi parta lashon hara v'garam talanu l'sanoto. Right. Meaning, who's responsible? Well, you sold him. Well, I wouldn't have sold him if you didn't start speaking about him so negatively. Well, I wouldn't speak so negatively if he hadn't said blah blah blah. You know, like it's interesting. Rashi says that's lefi pshuto shel mikra. So Rashi first brings a midrash shem al chazal, and then tells you the pshat, like the simple understanding of like the nature is to fight. So al tir gazu baderech. Don't be berogis. Don't, how shall we say? Don't blame each other on the way.
Don't have like a messed up family vacation where everyone's fighting.
Right. Okay. Now it's interesting that Yosef so like he doesn't. He just says don't get into fights. But he doesn't really say, like, how they're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't really say why. Okay. Anyway. But yeah.
It's a strange thing to say.
What?
It's a strange thing to say.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It just is.
Okay. How do you tell your father? How do you do it? They came to Eretz Canaan to Yaakov their father. V'yagidu lo lemor. Od Yosef chai. V'chihu Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. V'yafag libo ki lo ha'emin lahem. Fascinating pasuk. This is like fascinating. Od Yosef chai. What does Od Yosef chai mean?
Yosef still alive.
Od Yosef chai.
Still
Yosef is alive. V'chi hu Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim.
He's ruling the Eretz
Mitzrayim. Right. Like, you know, like one gets a sense that they're trying
to tell your father.
Right. Guess what we found out? You know? Okay. Vayafog libo. What does that mean?
His heart fainted.
Vayafog. Pag.
Pag is a preemie.
Right. Vayafog. Lahafig. Right. That's a pag in Hebrew.
He had a heart attack.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? Vayafog libo. So the question is, did he have a heart attack? Like when you hear something shocking.
Heart skip a beat.
Heart skip a beat. Which one is it?
Because he didn't believe them.
Okay.
Sounds like he would have heart attack.
Ki lo ha'emin lahem. Which is it? Did he have a heart attack? Did his heart skip a beat?
His heart could have skipped a beat and he could have fainted.
Listen to an unbelievable Ramban. Okay. Wait, let's read one more pasuk. Vayidabru alav et kol divrei Yosef asher diber alehem. And they spoke to him all the words of Yosef that he said to them. Vayar et ha'agalot asher yashalach Yosef laseit oto. And he saw the agalot. He saw these carriages. Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem.
He was receptive.
His spirit, vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem. And his spirit of Yaakov, their father, was resuscitated. Vayomer Yisrael.
Together.
Ask the question, Lori.
Why is it switched from Yaakov to Yisrael?
Yeah, right. All of a sudden, you notice that, right? All of a sudden, it's Vayomer Yisrael, Rav, Od Yosef Bnei Chai. Translate that one without looking.
Wow.
Translate Vayomer Yisrael, Vayomer Yisrael, Rav, Od Yosef Bnei Chai.
It's enough that my son's alive. Like, what? It doesn't matter that he's the.
Translate the words.
Multiple.
What?
All the brothers agree that his brothers.
Many, okay? Many. Oh, Yosef Bnei Chai.
Majority
of my brother is my son is alive? No. Not Rof, Rab. Translate.
A lot. It says a lot.
A lot.
A lot taken.
You're adding words. Okay.
Still.
Now you looked. What does he say?
Joseph, my son, is yet alive.
Where? What word did he forget to translate?
Well, let's
read the whole verse. Enough. It is enough. What is enough?
That my son's alive.
Meaning that the fact that he's ruling Egypt is irrelevant.
Well, right, but it is enough. Rav is a very strange word to translate. All the Mefarshim have difficulty translating. What does it mean, Rav? Rav means it's a lot. Okay? My son is alive. El chave erenu b'terem amut. I will go see him before I die. What in the world is going on here? Okay, so first look at the Ramban. Crazy Ramban. Vayafeg libo. Okay. See Ramban on Chafvav. So Sephorno, just for background information, Sephorno says that he fainted. Nitalef. Okay? Look at Ramban if you have it. You see it, Larry? Okay. Nechlaf libo. V'halach milah amin. His heart was vayafeg, turned away, and did not believe. Lo haya libo pone el hadvarim. Okay, he couldn't. So according to one interpretation, vayafeg libo means
his
heart turned away from them. His heart didn't listen to them. Okay, Then we're going to skip to the next paragraph, and he explains why it could be. V'gam ze. Okay. Vayafeg libo, shenitbatel libo upaska nishmato. His heart nitbatel.
Stopped.
Upaska nishmato.
And he died.
Paska nishmato means?
His neshama.
Nishima, not neshama.
Breath.
He stopped breathing. Ki paska tenuat halev vahaya kemet.
He was like
this. I.e., in our language?
He had a heart attack.
Vayafeg libo, Ramban says he had a heart attack. V'zeh inyan yadua b'vosim chapitom. This is a well-known thing when you have sudden joy. B'huz kar b'sifei refuot. And it's mentioned in the medical text. Ki lo yizbelu zeh hazkenim mechalushi hakoach. Old people can't take these things.
His brother for 10 years and his brother came to Israel to visit for a vacation and he saw my father and he had a stroke. He
was right then?
And he had a stroke. They rushed to the hospital and then he wasn't allowed to leave Israel. The the neurologist, the cardiologist, said he's never allowed to leave because of the pressure. So he had a forced aliyah. He lives in Italy.
Really?
Anyway, okay. But when they saw each other, he had a stroke. So he was like, so.
Okay, this is looking. This is the Ramban's medical diagnosis. Okay. The heart opens suddenly, and your temperature goes down immediately, right? Because why? The heart is open, so all the heat goes out. And the person becomes immediately cold because he loses his temperature, and then the heart stops. That's the technical. You'll tell me if that's correct.
What? Makes no medical sense.
It makes medical sense if you have no idea what a heart is and how it works. Okay. Nafal hasakan kemet. He fell. Right? He felt like he was dead. Ve'amar ki lo emin lahem. Okay. It says that he didn't believe them. Lahakid she'amad zman gadol min hayom. Right? It wasn't like, oh, he like fainted and then they're like, no, he's alive, Dad. No, really, he's alive. Don't
believe. Didn't they know this?
It means that what happened? They put him in bed. And the day, like, they're like freaking out. We killed Dad. Oh my God, right? And then he wakes up and he's like, he's silent.
That
he's like, comatose. Why does it make sense?
Because they're telling him, it says that he.
It doesn't know how, you don't know how long it took.
No, because it says, first it says that, and his heart fainted, and then it says they told him all the words of Yosef. So if they thought he was dead, why are they telling him all this stuff?
No, he's lying down, and then like I assume what the Ramban thinks is like they put him in bed or they whatever, they got him in the bed, and then like sometime later he revived. He's silent, he's not listening. So they're like, Dad, he's alive, and he's like, you guys are bazongers, like you crazy.
But aren't they okay? Individual? They knew this would happen.
Hold on, we'll get to it in a second. They knew that after he fainted, they have to accustom him to this joy. That apparently the medical, the doctor came and said, yeah, keep telling him. That'll make him, eventually it'll sink in and he'll feel better. I'm not sure who the doctor was, but I don't know if that's what they would have.
Well, they say when people are in a coma, keep talking to them because we don't know what it does or doesn't.
Because that time, he says, that's the reason. They said all the words of Yosef. They kept saying it. They kept saying, Yosef is alive. Dad, come back. He's alive. We have to go to Egypt. You're going to get better. And we know that this is going to, you know, like, I guess. I don't know. Okay, then, one second. Vayarita agalot. He saw the agalot. I wonder how, like, he's in the tent, so they must have either carried him outside or I don't know what. Okay. So Akim ba'aznav divrei Yosef, they were screaming in his ears the words of Yosef. Umivim lefanav ha'agalot.
They brought the
agalot into ICU. Okay. Az shavar ruchoy elav v'chazon nishimato. Then his spirit came back and he began to breathe. V'zo v'techi ruach Yaakov avihem. That's exactly what the pasuk says. V'techi ruach Yaakov avihem. He was resuscitated. So Ramban says literally he had a heart attack. He wasn't breathing. Maybe he was breathing very shallowly, right? He had very shallow, very, very sudden breaths. They couldn't see. And they put him in bed and they started screaming at him. And finally he woke up, he heard, and then he was resuscitated. 30 cc's of, I don't know, trebuchet or whatever. Okay. Sorry. All you medical people can do what you want with that. How do you tell a person something without driving the bananas? Okay, so this is the midrash that Karen referred to before. How do you tell him? So the Midrash says the following. Midrash says they knew there was a problem.
Show them the agalot first.
No. They said, Amru. They said, Im anu omrim lo techila Yosef kayam. If we say to him first, Yosef is alive, Shema tifrach nishmato. Maybe it'll kill him. I'm reading the Midrash. Okay? Ma'asu. So what are they saying? Amru l'serach bat asher. You familiar with this person? Serach bat asher? Who is Serach bat asher?
Asher's daughter,
Yaakov's granddaughter. You tell Dad. Okay? In the Midrash, they asked her to tell him. Why would they ask her to tell him? So you know like later legends about Serach bat Asher. Like, what do you know about her?
And then she lived.
Oh, yeah, she lived many. Right. That she, well, clearly, I mean, like in the Midrash, she was his. One second. See what the Midrash says, okay? So they say, Himtina lo adshu omed betfila. So she waited until he was davening. V'amar b'lashon teima. And she asks questions. V'chi Yosef b'Mitzrayim? Is Joseph in Egypt? V'chi Yivaldu Abirkayim Menashe v'Ephraim? And perhaps he had children named Menashe v'Ephraim? Paglibo, like, you know, he's like, you can't believe it, they're in the middle of davening. When he finished, Ra'aha Agalot. And he saw these Agalot and he understood. I.e., in the Midrash, there is no mention that I could see of any musical ability of Serach Bat Asher. But later on, developed this tradition that Serach Bat Asher was it a magical harp, or just she was a good harp player? She was a musician, right? She calmed his heart, and she was able to.
It doesn't go with the giant with the shot.
What? That there was this woman who told him?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say how they told him. I don't know. Maybe they played hangman. Maybe they played. Never guess who we met. Vav. Letter two. Correct.
Wait, so then why does his heart
stop? That's like my famous joke. My famous joke. Never heard the famous joke about the cat? The cat got stuck in the tree? Never heard that. None of you know this joke? You know the joke, Karen? Guy comes home from a long business trip and he says to his wife, oh, how are things? So she says, yeah, the cat died. What do you mean? What do you mean the cat died? That's terrible news. How could you tell me like that? She's like, well, how am I supposed to tell you? You know this. How is it? Well, first you're supposed to say the cat got stuck in a tree. Oh, that's terrible. What happened? Then the cat got sick because she was stuck in the tree. We took her to the vet. We tried to save her. Nothing could happen. And then we tried, but the cat died. You know where I'm going with this? She's like, I'm really sorry. You're absolutely right. I'll try not to make that mistake again. Thank you. Well, welcome home anyway. By the way, how's mom? Oh, mom got stuck in a tree.
And he died.
You never heard that joke? It's like such an old joke. What?
It's terrible.
You've heard the joke? No, that is terrible. Anyway, so that's Serach Bat Asher, right? You know, like, you know, you have to know how to break the news. That's.
She was a hospice nurse.
What?
She was a hospice nurse.
She was hot, yeah. She was his favorite. There are whole like traditions. I started to look it up
Why did Binyamin tell? Binyamin was his favorite.
There are whole traditions. Apparently not the granddaughter, really. The granddaughter. Okay. The whole traditions about like who she was and her personality. And there's like a whole shul in Gerba that got associated and known as like Serach Bat Asher. Like in Sephardic tradition, she has like this huge presence.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
So they say.
Different people have different
voices. No one names their
kids
Serach. Probably was so empathetic.
What?
No one names Sarah.
Serach Bat Asher, yeah.
You've heard the name Sarah?
Of course, yeah. It's in the Chumash. Her name appears.
No, I'm saying people have.
Oh, no, you don't know any people named Sarah. But then, like, she lived many years. According to the Midrash, like, she was there at the, you know, you see at Mitzrayim. She lived for many hundreds of years. So she says she's this legendary figure that appears in Tanakh. And there aren't that many of them. Like, Og is one of them. Sarah is one of them. Eliyahu is another one of them. Most of them are usually not female figures. I'm sure if you look it up, you could see like many, many legendary stories about Serach Bat Asher. It's by somebody who wrote anymore. Okay. Anyway, so the Midrash realizes the problem. How do we break the news to Dad? Like, how do we tell him? And it's clear. Like, so what's so fascinating is, what do we know about Yaakov and his belief about Yosef?
He didn't think he had really died.
Oh. How do you know?
Because he didn't stop.
He didn't quite mourning the whole mourning thing.
Correct. He never stopped mourning for him. I.e., he never forgot about him. The point of mourning is
couldn't move on.
Right. Exactly the point. The point of mourning is.
It doesn't mean he knew if he was alive or dead. It's just a normal psychological trait of a parent.
So what?
To not give up hope.
No body, no death.
Meaning what?
Meaning until there was confirmation.
Then what? Then.
Then he could move on.
But something in your heart tells you so that he never really accepted that Yosef is dead. And now they come and tell him the thing. Remember that thing that you hoped for your whole life that you never accepted that he was dead? You were right. And what does it say?
Past that.
What does it say? No, before in his heart. Lo ha'amin lahem.
He didn't believe him.
He didn't believe him.
Why didn't he believe him?
You wait for something for so long.
Because it's
for
such
so long
a
and
shock.
It happens, and
what?
You wait for something for so long, it eventually happens, you get it, and it's like, really?
You can't, I mean, right, like, part of psychology
surreal.
Is to say, like, how could it possibly be this thing that I wanted for so long is actually true? Now, what's really interesting is, did he not believe them, like, temporarily?
Yeah.
Meaning he didn't believe them just because, like, oh, I don't believe you? I can't believe it?
Yeah, he couldn't believe it. He couldn't cope with that reality.
Or did he not believe them?
Yeah, why?
Why?
Because they did it.
The simple understanding of Lohem Min Lohem is not the first. It's not what we once say, oh, I don't believe you. Like, oh my God, I'm in shock. That's what Yafik Libo. I'm in shock. Then you don't accept. That doesn't mean, when you say, I don't believe you, oh my God, I don't believe you. You don't mean I don't believe you. You mean this is unbelievable. This is, like, that's what we mean when we say it's unbelievable. Unbelievable doesn't mean unbelievable. Unbelievable means this is beyond my wildest imagination. This is crazy. This is terrific.
Like all these phone calls when they win the lottery and the news.
Yeah. When you call them, oh my God, whatever. What does emin mean?
What's emunah?
Truth
is.
What's
emunah? Tell me a true thing.
What's faith?
I don't have faith in you.
He didn't trust them.
Mm-hmm. It's kind
of
sad.
He had reason.
What in the world would cause them to say Yosef is alive and he's in Egypt? I.e., think about this for a minute. Turn it around, I just thought of this. What in the world would cause them to say Yosef's alive? We found him, he's in Egypt.
Well, they just came back, they lost Binyamin before.
No, he's back.
Yeah, but I mean, before they had other things mm-hmm. going on mm-hmm. that made him cross.
Okay. Like, let's think for a minute. What would be the benefit of telling Dad that Joseph is really alive? We found him. He's really alive.
He's out of his depression.
And what are you assuming?
That he'll interact with you again, normally. He'll return to his old self.
Okay, but what is Yaakov assuming? He's alive, but...
He's a prisoner.
Definitely. Oh, he's a prisoner. And what? Joseph's alive in Egypt?
And maybe he's not religious.
Well, and he's a slave. He's nothing.
We found him. Okay.
The thing that revives him is to see the agalot. So he must.
Why? What is the agalot?
That's called on the street.
What?
Doing well.
No, I don't think so. Why the agalot?
God took care of him.
What?
God took care of him.
Oh, okay. Possibly. What did the agalot symbolize? What was the purpose of the agalot?
Money. Well.
No.
Parnassus.
No. What was the purpose of the agalot?
With him.
Oh.
I'd have to be returned.
Well, no. What was the purpose of the agalot?
To bring his father.
To bring his father. What could Yaakov not do anymore?
Live without him.
No.
Move.
Why?
Because he was old.
And therefore, what can't you do? What can't he do?
Travel long distances.
On?
Horseback. Oh, on a donkey.
On a donkey.
But on a wagon he can.
Well, you're 120 years old, 130 years old. I can't do it anymore. Okay, and then it says at the end it says Vayareta agalot laset oto. I just thought of this, and he saw the agalot that were there to carry him. Vatechi Yaakov ruach Yaakov avihem. Then his spirit was raised because what did he realize? Vayomer Rav Nosim Elcha ve'erenu. I'm going to see him. Like until that point, he didn't believe them. Why? What would be the purpose of telling? Oh, wow, this is shocking. What would be the purpose of telling him this? Oh, he's alive. Oh, he's alive. Great.
He knew it already.
What?
He knew it already.
No, he didn't believe them. He didn't trust them. They're lying to me. Why are they lying to me? Because
I'm waiting for another disappointment.
Because I won't see it anyway.
I'm not going to see it anyway, so why not tell me? And like, okay, whatever. And then, oh, Yosef's alive. Great. So now we can all move on. Right? Yosef einenu, Binyamin einenu. This whole family is stuck on this Yosef thing for 22 years. Yosef, Yosef, Yosef. Reminds me of like the Brady Bunch. Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. We're all old enough to know that. You don't know what I'm talking about? You didn't watch a Brady Bunch? You didn't watch a Brady Bunch growing up?
Gotta love Jane.
Right? Yeah, Yosef, Yosef, Yosef. Everything's he's alive! Okay, we found him! Great! You know, leave us alone. He didn't believe them, and he sees that I'm Elcha. I'm going to see him.
But isn't it a big deal for him to leave Israel?
That's like very upsetting. Yes, very big deal. He doesn't want to. That's why he's upset. And the Nifsukim talk about that. God comes to him and says, go to Egypt. He's very afraid. Very, very afraid. Anyway, that's like a Rashi. Famous, famous Rashi.
Joseph should have come to him. It's not nice.
He wasn't allowed to.
Yeah. Oh, we've discussed this in the past. Why did Yosef not come? We've discussed that. Okay. Look at Rashi on Et kol divrei Yosef. Look back on Chav Zayin, first of all. Vayidabru elav et kol divrei Yosef. What word is interesting to me in that phrase? Why?
Two meanings.
No, what am I saying? What word? Did you hear what she
kol,
said?
Kol.
Why?
Divrei is enough.
No.
No.
They kol talked about divrei, the sale, but everything that happened.
Story? The whole story? Did they really tell him everything? Meaning, what did Yosef say? They should have said, by your love, et divrei Yosef. Right? Kol divrei Yosef sounds like, did they really tell him everything? What?
They owned up.
Well, hold on. Look at Ramban. See you on Ramban and Chav Zayin? You got to bring a Ramban. I know it's like terrible. But Yerulav Kol Divrei Yosef says Ramban very clearly. Yerayli Al Derech Hapshat Shelo Hugad Yaakov Kol Yamav Ki Achiv Mechuret Yosef. They did not tell him everything. They never told him Achiv Mechuret Yosef. Right. I gave a speech once about this. We call it Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Sometimes you don't want, like, I'm giving a talk tonight for rabbis about drashot. You know, like we live in a time where everybody needs to know everything. Everybody needs to know everything about everything. Like that everything is my business, and it's true that there's some importance of information being free. But sometimes information is too free. You know, like...
We're talking about this in the beginning. Do the kids need to know that there was another...
Oh. Right, it's a great question. Right, do they need to know everything? Like, I spoke about this before. Do we need to know? By the way, I have this mukada I'm subscribed to on Facebook. It's like, I don't want to be, but I want to be. I don't want to be, but I want to know. You know what I'm saying? It's like this need to know that's so unhealthy. But even so, like, what? Like, you don't need to know everything every public official does. It's not beneficial to us to know what people have done in their past. Okay? We seem to, you know, do we need to know, like,
do you need to know? Very relevant to Shidduchim.
Very. Very. I mean,
well,
you need to know now.
You need to know.
Well, some things you do.
What should you do?
What?
You need to know.
Why? You need to know what this person is now. You need to know what kind of person they are today. Right. Do you really need to know everything they did in the past? If people know everything about you,
okay,
would you get the job? Would you, you know what I'm saying? Would you meet the person? Would you make the friend? Would you? No, of course not. Because we all have things that we've done that we're not proud of. And that's why God created forgetfulness. He did.
And teshuvah.
That's what he created. God created the ability to change. You know, that people are allowed to change. God forbid. That, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a curse, people who can't forget. It's a tremendous curse. And no, we need to know. So, like, according to Yaakov, they never told him, and he never asked. Like, we all have our...
So, who's no, perspective?
We all have our suspicions. Well, we can, but there's a beauty to the ability to choose not to want to know.
Ignorance is bliss.
That's right. Yes, mm-hmm. So when it says they brought him kol divrei Yosef, like that's like the elephant in the room of his family. You know what I'm saying? For his whole life, he's in Egypt for 20 years, and nobody says anything. Yeah.
That's messed up.
No.
That's a messed up family. Nobody's talking about like. They should own up what they did. They should.
Why?
They've been punished
themselves.
What's going for what? To assuage their own guilt?
To be free from their guilt and their.
Why should they be free of their guilt?
Because if they admit it. Then
and then what? What's he going to say? Okay, it's okay. I forgive you. Yosef forgave them. That's the greatness of Yosef. Greatness of Yosef. Okay.
I have
a question. Et kol divrei Yosef. See Rashi. Very famous Rashi. Here. Yeah.
On Chav Zayin. So who's is this Yaakov's perspective that they told him everything?
Why does it say everything? So, like, so Ramban, what's the answer to this? Why does it say, et kol divrei Yosef? One second. He says, Yaakov never knew. I don't know why he says what kol divrei Yosef means. He says, meaning, so how would you interpret kol divrei Yosef? All the words of Yosef, tell my father that I'm alive and that I'm a Moshel, etc., etc.
I think it's from Yaakov's perspective. He thought they're telling him everything.
No.
Why? How else does it make sense?
Wouldn't it make sense, by the way, because Yosef says, Ani Yosef ha'od abicha. Right? Ani Yosef asher machartem oti lemitzayim. I'm Yosef who you sold into Egypt. Mm-hmm. I mean, did they repeat that? According to Ramban, they did not repeat that.
Exactly, so that's why when they say from Yaakov's perspective that they told him everything.
No, because if he thought they told him everything, he would ask, wouldn't he?
He would ask what? What happened?
Yeah, what happened? But wouldn't you?
Yeah.
How'd he get there? Tell me. I forget that. When he gets down to Egypt, you would think the first thing he would say is, so? What you been doing all these years?
He doesn't want to know.
What?
He doesn't want to know.
Would you?
No. Well, he had Ruach HaKodesh.
Yeah, but he lost it from then. Remember, he lost it for 20 years. Anyway. Rashi. At Kol Divrei Yosef. What in the world? So Chazal have a very famous midrash that I wanted to focus on. Siman Masar Lahem. He gave them a siman, a sign. B'ma haya osek kishipiresh mimenu. Right? Yaakov and Yosef, they learned Chavruta. So what were they learning? Parshat Egla Arufa. They were learning the story of Egla Arufa. Zeu sheneamar vayar et ha'agalot asher shalach Yosef. What are agalot? Agalot are wagons. V'lo neamar asher shalach paro. Notice, remember, we said who sent the wagons?
Originally Paro.
Paro. But it says, et ha'agalot asher shalach Yosef. Right, the wagons that Yosef sent. It was a code.
Wow.
So why did Yosef send agalot? So he says agalot. It's very weird, by the way, if you think about it. The whole midrash is very, very strange. Okay? One second. It's almost the direct quote from the midrash. Okay? The midrash says, Amar lahem Yosef. Yosef said to the brothers, Im ha'amin lahem harei mutab. If dad believes you, great. V'im lav, atem imrulo. Say to him, V'sha'a sheperashti mimcha, halo beparshat egla arufa hayiti Yosef. Remember, dad? When we last talked, we were learning egla arufa.
What is that?
What? Oh, what is egla arufa? What in the world is the connection between Yosef and egla arufa? Okay, what is the parsha of egla arufa? Egla arufa literally means... Egla is a calf. Arufa means its neck is cut from the back. Okay, well, so what is the parsha of Egla Arufa? Says the Torah. This is very important in order to understand the whole context. This is from Dvarim Perek Kavav. Ki matzei chalal ba'adama asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha levishta nofel basadeh lo noda mihika. You find somebody dead in the wilderness on the road.
You're supposed to bury him right away.
That for sure you're supposed to do. But even more than that. He's not dead. Chalav, he's killed. He was killed. Very good. Your elders and your judges shall go out. They measure the cities around the dead body. Really, they take a measurement. They measure. The closest city. They must take a calf, asher lo ubad, ba asher lo mashcha ba'ol. Never used. Like a freshly born calf that was never worked. And they have to take this egla, this calf. By the way, a calf is a very precious thing. It's a very expensive thing. Okay, it is a potential for not just meat. An egla was a potential for work, right? It was a work animal. They would take it to a nachal etan, a dead nachal, meaning of rocks, okay? That was never worked, that was never planted, and will never be planted. You don't shecht it. If you shecht it, you can eat it. What do? They break its neck from the back, okay? They cut it, they kill it from the back, by nachal. So the Levian approach. All of the elders, they wash their hands over this dead calf that's in the middle of this dead wadi that will never be planted and has never been planted. Va'anu means they raise their voices and they say, Yadenu lo shavchu et adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u. We did not spill this blood, our eyes did not see. I.e., we're not responsible. And then there's a prayer. Kaper la'amcha Yisrael asher patita Hashem ba'altitem dam naki bekerav amcha Yisrael v'nikaper la'amadam, that the blood should atone God and not have innocent blood. V'ata tiv'er adam aniki mikribecha ki ta'aseh ha'yashar b'ani Hashem. God, you should burn out, root out like the innocent blood from your midst, then we will do the righteousness in the name of God. That's the ritual of Egla Arufa. That's the story. That's the sugya. By the way, it's a whole, like, you know, were they really learning Torah, etc., etc.? came along Chazal in the Midrash and they made a direct connection that Rashi quotes between this parsha of Egla Arufa and the story of Yosef. And so said Chazal, through the agalot, through the wagons that Yosef sent, he sent this hidden message to his father. How did Yaakov know he was alive? Remember, don't think Egla agalot, wagons, think Egla, the last sugya that we were learning together. Okay? What?
Stretch.
It's a bit of a stretch. Right. You know who thinks it's a bit of a stretch?
Rashi.
Everyone. Right? So all the Mefarshim, all the commentators, try to understand what in the world is the connection between Egla Arufa, right? This sugya of Egla Arufa and Yosef. Why would they be learning that the last thing? Okay? Very interesting question. It's a very fascinating question, very deep question. So it just so happens that we just finished the Gemara Sota in Daf Yomi. Some of the last few pages, the last chapter is called Egla Arufa. It just appears. So there's a Gemara that says, Tanu Rabbanan, right, the rabbi said, V'chol ziknei ha'ir ha'hi ha'korvim ala chalal, yirtzu et yidehem, okay, one second, and they say, okay, yadeinu lo shafchu et adam ve'einenu lo ra'u. So who do they bring out? Like, God forbid, if you find, somebody dead on the road between Yad Binyamin and Beit Chilkiah, and it turns out it's close to Yad Binyamin, so Rav Hadaya and Rav Luz and Rav Holstein, all these rabbis have to go out and they kill this thing, they wash their hands and they say, we didn't kill them.
They still do it now?
No, well, we do it. We what?
Investigate.
I mean, we call the police, but we don't.
An unsolvable murder? Would they do it now? Fascinating question. Says the Gemara, "V'chi al libenu al tashet beitin shofkim damim."
Where did find a nachal that was never planted and could never be?
Oh, very, never planted. Nachal that never be planted. Nachal etam.
Everywhere it's like that.
Now there is, okay, but even in the, like you can find plenty of places. Sure, if you go like in the Shomron hills, there's a lot of nachalim. Even near here, there are. It's not hard. You go down to there's a wadi that goes down from Nachal Sarek. There are plenty of places where it's like rocky or whatever. Okay? Says the Gemara, V'chi alta al libeinu shebeitin shofim damim? Like, what in the world? Like, do we really think that the beitin, they're murderers? Like, why do the beitin have to wash their hands? Ela, what are they really saying? Lo bali yadeinu upitrunuhu bulo mezonot. Right? What causes a person to murder another person, like out in the wilderness between cities? A sense of desperation.
They weren't looked after.
This person never came to us and we sent him away without food. Below ri'inuhu, we did not see him. V'him chinuhu below levia. And we did not allow him to go without levia. Levia is?
Escort.
It was very dangerous to travel between cities. Right? So they wouldn't let people travel on their own. Rather, they would go in shayarot. They would go in caravans, in convoys. Why? It's because otherwise it would be very dangerous. So very interestingly, this halakha of Egla Arufa is a broad, much broader halakha than just the ritual of, taking a calf and slaughtering it. It's a halakha about communal responsibility. Right? That if people have needs, the murderer who killed, of course, is responsible for what he did. But other people are responsible as well. And ultimately, who does it really fall upon? The religious leaders who allowed the community to be such a way that it would allow someone to come and not give him enough food that he'd have to go start robbing people in the middle of the road. It's a very
breakdown of society.
Yeah. But not just a breakdown of society, it's a building up society because it attributes responsibility to the community to ensure for the needs of the most destitute and the people who have the least.
It's very shocking in cities to see all homeless people. Nobody's like taking.
I wouldn't say nobody. There are a lot of
there are definitely
organizations. Sure, you can't solve everyone's problems, but the today's society is unbelievably built up from the perspective of trying to. People will say it's not enough, but trying to help the needs of those who don't have, and ensuring that their basic needs are met. The question really is the argument is what are basic needs? What's fair? But nobody would argue today, I hope you can argue today, that we ignore the most destitute and they're dying in the middle of the streets. Thank God that doesn't exist. I mean,
it does exist, but it's not necessarily because of the society.
Correct. You can't solve everyone's problems. And you can try, but you can't cure their drug addictions necessarily, and you can't cure their mental illness. But there are at least basic needs: food. There are shelters. They're not great, and of course we'd like them to be better. But this is the ethic that emanates from Egla Arufa. Let me ask you this question. Now that you know Egla Arufa, what in the world is Yosef sending the message to his father?
Yeah. It's not his brother's fault. I remember my learning.
What?
I remember my learning.
Oh, there's a lot of different interpretations. The first interpretation is exactly that. Okay. So I have for you, I found three different interpretations. One second. Okay. First interpretation is I'll share from you from Rav Yossi Kahana, who is the Rosh Upanak Bnei Akiva Amanak Bar Saba. Okay? He's the head of the Upanak Bar Saba. Okay? He says the following: Yaakov was aware of the danger, the spiritual danger of Egypt. Okay? So therefore, before Yaakov sent him away, it's interesting, he says, Yaakov sent Yosef. When did Yosef get sold by his brothers? Who sent Yosef on the final journey? Before Yosef went, where did Yosef go? Before he left home, who sent Yosef on his final? His father did. His father sent him where? Sent him to Shechem in order to go see what his brothers were doing. So he writes, Yaakov knew that Shechem was a dangerous place. It was not good for the Jewish people. So he says, and this I don't think is pshat at all. Yaakov knew the dangers, therefore, Hayachayav Yaakov litzayed Yosef b'mazon ruchani. He gave him spiritual mazon, spiritual food, leviya ruchanit, spiritual accompaniment, so that he would be able to deal with all of the dangers that are on the road from a religious perspective. Therefore, he taught him Egla Arufa. That's what he says. Okay? So when Yaakov and Yosef sent back, he says, remind him of the things that I'm learning. What is he sending? What is he selling to him? I'm still the same Yosef. I still remember the last thing that we learned. You like that? Pshat? Drash? No? Good? Bad? That's one interpretation. A second interpretation is the interpretation of... Why would we say it? Okay, one second. Well, it goes a little, there's a lot deeper reasons. One second. He says... the second interpretation is from Yossi Stern of Akko. He says he didn't send... If Yaakov really wanted to tell him about Egla Arufa, then what would he send him? What would he send the brothers with?
Mark.
No.
A calf.
So why would he send him wagons if he really wanted to remind him of a calf?
It was too difficult.
What?
No,
you can send him with a calf. Okay. One second. So he says that the agalot were not the agalot of Egla Arufa. It was the agala, the wagons of the Mishkan. Later on, we're going to read that, we just read this on Hanukkah. Right, that when the Nesi'im gave their gifts to the Mishkan, they also gave the Levim wagons. And they made these wagons, and they gave them these wagons in order to carry the heavy stuff from the Mishkan. That Yaakov was afraid to go down to Egypt, what's going to happen to my family? So Yosef is sending the message, no, it's all okay. There's a much deeper reason of Egla Arufa. What do we learn about Egla Arufa?
Because Yosef is the Egla Arufa.
Oh, but if that's true, what kind of message is that?
That his brothers are guilty.
Brothers?
The leaders are guilty.
Brothers?
Yaakov's guilty.
Who sent him away?
Yaakov.
Right. Kliyakar sort of alludes to this.
What do you mean, right?
When Kliyakar alludes to this. Says the Kliyakar. Okay. He says the following. Kamosha Mudidin, one of the messages of Egla Arufa, it's a long essay. He says, first he says that why was his spirit to raise up? He says, what was the purpose of sending Agalot? It's a very dangerous trip back, up and back, especially if you're laden with all kinds of great stuff and money, etc., etc. You're a target. How would you be protected? Why would thieves...
Are they in a group?
Why would thieves... Well, they're in a group, but why would thieves not descend upon them and rob the train?
They're very mighty and strong.
Well, that's
they're
one
big.
Reason. What do they have?
Weapons.
They have agalot. What do the agalot represent, remember?
Oh, it represents power.
Oh, it represents... The king. You're not going to... You don't mess with people who have connection to the king. Mm-hmm. Right? You don't... That's the agalot. It's very interesting. It says, that's a representation of the leviyah. That Yosef was milave otam. He accompanied them. And Yaakov realized that Yosef would know that because that's the last thing they learned from Egla Arufa, this idea of levia, of accompaniment. Chazal talk about the idea of accompaniment is very, very important. Right, that we, you know, there's a thing about accompanying your guests outside the house. They emphasize it very strongly.
Why didn't Yaakov accompany?
But they talk about accompanying people outside, even to like mamash liluvia, accompanying them on their way to give them a sense of security and protection. So that's one thing. But then he says the following: right? Why did they measure? They wanted to measure who is physically responsible. What city is the last city that this person was in? Okay. We also evaluate a medida sichlit, an intellectual evaluation. Okay. What was the sin that caused this person to be killed? Was it his sin? Meaning you madad, you evaluate, you measure. His sin? Was it the people's sin? Was it the city's sin? The person who's closest has to do kapara. So he says the message of the Egla Arufa to his father was, who's responsible for what happened? Hold on a second. It's a very, very interesting and...
So who
was closest? Right. He sent him this Egla Arufa. Sending a hidden message to his father would ask himself, what sin caused him to be in pain for so long? Okay, so now what are we thinking? What sin?
The brothers, but it was actually
him. What? No, what sin would have caused him to be in pain for so long?
That he sent to
Shechem. Sending Yosef by himself to
Shechem. Well, that wouldn't be the sin. What would be the problem?
Or not realizing that his brothers
have this. Right, the whole family thing. So Kliyakar doesn't go that far. Kliyakar says, is why? What is it? One second. Okay. The imstash is zechet shelokiyeh mitzvat kibud avein kapet shana. Right, Yaakov was stayed away from his family and didn't honor his father for 22 years. And so therefore, he lost his son for 22 years. That's what Kliyakar says. That was the message of Egla Rufa. I think you can take it one step further and say no. Right. The question is, when you send the Egla, the whole message of Egla Arufa is responsibility. Who's responsible? The Ziknei Ha'ir, the elders of the city, they're the ones that have to go out and say, Yadenu lo shafchu. Right? Can you say that?
Not
have you done a Chesed Nefesh?
Yeah.
Right? So that's...
He wouldn't say that to his father.
What?
He wouldn't say that to his father.
Well, he sort of did.
One second. Okay, so the last interpretation I'll bring for you is from Rav Menashe Wiener of Yeshivat Ma'alot. Who doesn't go, nobody says that. I couldn't find anybody who would say such a thing. Like, would you say that to your father? Would you send me and say, did Yaakov know? Right? You'd ask, why did Yaakov not ask? You know what the answer is, so maybe?
Because he knew.
And he knew. And in the end, who did he blame?
Himself. Right.
You don't have to ask.
But doesn't that go back to the idea of the sins of the fathers and the sins of the sons?
Sure. 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 Who do you know? You don't have to ask. He doesn't want to know. Sometimes you don't want to know. Because when the truth hits you in the face, and all those years, it's too painful. It's too difficult. You know? That's one interpretation. So Ravina says the opposite. He says the purpose of the Egla Arufa is, he says, Achrayut Sheyesh L'chol Yisrael Yachad. Everyone's responsible. Like, not the person who killed this guy, not the one who sold him into slavery, not the person, you know, who actually did the murder, but there's a communal responsibility. There's really community. And so he says that Yosef is sending the message to Yaakov, exactly the opposite of what he just said. Mm-hmm. That it's not that you're responsible, but not that you're not responsible. We all did things to make this happen. I was a jerk. My brothers hated my guts. You didn't stop us. Everybody had a hand in this thing. And if you think about it, I really like that shot a lot. Because if you think about it, it's really true. Nobody walks away from this story smelling like a rose. You know what I'm saying? And that's really the powerful message of Egla Arufa. It goes all the way to the top. Right? Like from the policeman who didn't stop the guy from robbing, like the lack of criminal enforcement, but all the way to the mayor who set the budget priorities and didn't put enough money into homeless, you know, rehabilitation. There's a communal responsibility. And I think maybe that's what Yosef's message really was to his brothers. You didn't send me here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me here. We're all the shlichim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we all have a responsibility, and the idea of trying to assign blame and say it's your fault or my fault or his fault, where do we get us? All that does is, what I'm trying to say is it's not my fault, when it really is all of our fault. But we'll stop here.